Hello, everyone. This is the Sports Gig Podcast, your home for news in the sports media world. I'm Dr. Chris Bacon from Middle Tennessee State University. In this episode, NBC partners with Twitter for Olympics coverage, TB12 expands his horizons in the media landscape, and ESPN loses two bowl games due to COVID-19. Today's special guest, Dr. Katie Foss, author of the new book, Constructing the Outbreak, Epidemics in Media and Collective Memory. She stops by to discuss epidemics and sports coverage. And in our jobs segment, a director of athletics communications opening in the state of North Carolina, a sports director opening in sunny Florida, and yet another opportunity producing content for a gaming website. Lots to get into, so let's get started.
Oh boy, nom. It's bacon!
This is the Bacon's Bit segment highlighting news in the sports media industry. NBC and Twitter have extended their partnership to pump out content for the next two Olympics. This includes the Summer Olympics in Tokyo next summer and the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. The original agreement was only for the Tokyo Olympics until it was postponed to 2021 due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Content includes a live studio program, live look-ins powered by Twitter Vote, and real-time highlights. Tom Brady, decent NFL quarterback, right? Well, his production company, Religion of Sports, has a new deal with Public Radio Exchange to host a series of podcasts. Deadline reports that topics will include sports and spirituality, and how athletes push the limits of human potential to reach peak mental and physical performance. They're expected to start next year. The college football season has been, shall we say, tumultuous due to the COVID-19 pandemic. ESPN announces that the Hawaii Bowl and the Bahamas Bowl will not be played this year. The goal is to bring both back in 2021. Don't cry for ESPN, though. They still have 15 other bowl games to air this year, but obviously that could change. Our guest this week is Dr. Katie Foss, a professor of journalism and strategic media at Middle Tennessee State University, which means she has to put up with me on a regular basis as a colleague of mine. She's got a new book out called Constructing the Outbreak, Epidemics in Media and Collective Memory. Dr. Foss, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, this is obviously as good of a time as any to have you on with our current situation. Now, you've analyzed all types of epidemics in this country with your own research. From what we've seen in recent months, what makes this fascinating in a way to you, seeing all that research that you've done in the past come to light and seeing it happen right before your own eyes?
Well, first off, I'll say that the biggest thing is that, first of all, it's more fun to read about epidemics than it is just to live through them. I'll say that. But I would also say that we, of course, have never experienced anything on this massive a scale, and particularly in a digital age. So that has absolutely shaped what we're seeing in our experiences. And I'd also say mass scale in terms of things shutting down. I mean, in all of my research, even though, of course, during the influenza pandemic in 1918, things shut down, but they didn't do it all at the same time. So to have kind of, they had pockets of things shutting down, and of course, sports delayed due to World War I, but it wasn't at the same time like we're seeing now, and certainly not in kind of a globally mediated society.
And plus, you talk about the media and the global interaction that we have. In past incidents like that, that we weren't as connected, right? We didn't have that. We were receiving information, but we didn't have that opportunity as just regular people to be participating in the conversation.
Oh, definitely not. So while people certainly created their own content through writing poems and stuff, you weren't able to know what people were experiencing, and even in different parts of the United States. You could write a letter, but likely that would be censored because World War I, and that would take a while. So people really didn't have that moment-to-moment or day-to-day kind of rundown of other people's experiences, feelings, thoughts, attitudes, et cetera.
Now, how have you seen the sports industry itself kind of being thrust into the topic of conversation this go-around?
Well, and we've seen kind of this evolution of how sports have been talked about, I would say, since March 1st with the shock to everyone when everything shut down. I mean, that really is a first to see everything shut down and to really not have sports, especially kind of national sports teams to follow. I mean, that was the biggest indication that life is not what we are used to, or that this is kind of this new warped reality. And of course, we've seen this parallel between how to return to normal by starting with bring back sports. But even that, of course, has not looked the same.
Right. How, from the research that you've done, how have sporting events and sports in general been this much of an issue in past epidemics that we've seen in the past? We talked about the shutdowns, but as far as the topic of conversation and at least, or even talking about the epidemic on a daily basis like we do, have you seen that in prior events?
No, I have not. Because other than 1918, at least in the United States, we've never had a mass scale kind of, I mean, we had epidemics. Cholera was really bad for a very long time, and certainly tuberculosis was too, but not all at once. So while you'd have towns shut down and shut down local sports, you wouldn't see it on a national level. So something we've never experienced, which really kind of shapes our reality right now, and especially a few months ago.
Yeah. And speaking of 1918, explain to those who may not be familiar with 1918, you know, what happened? And I mean, because that was, wow, 102 years ago. What was it that happened, and how much of a topic in everyday conversation in society was it?
Okay. So here's what's interesting about 1918, and something that people tend to forget when they talk about 1918 and try to draw it to parallel to now, was that so the influenza pandemic began with an outbreak in Kansas, actually, in March, and then it spread overseas because, of course, ships were going back and forth carrying soldiers because of World War I. It emerged in Asia, it emerged in Germany and Spain and the European countries, and then came back to the United States by late August, early September. And that was actually the first time that most people realized that there was even an epidemic going on, because it really wasn't covered in the newspapers, especially not in that spring wave. So even though there was a first wave, nobody even knew it existed. It didn't affect everyday life until September, or depending on where you're talking about, October. And October was at least constructed as the worst month in a lot of places. And that's where you saw people being quarantined or isolated, sports teams shutting down, if they hadn't already, because of the war. So like the national teams weren't playing anyway because of World War I, when we had shortened seasons. The college football teams went on hiatus for, depending on what team we're talking about, a month or 6 weeks. And that really was, again, just like now, the biggest signifier that life was not right. And in fact, the town that I studied, Lawrence, Kansas, for the University of Kansas, the one thing that made it into the yearbook the next year wasn't anything about campus shutting down and being quarantined. It was just that football was delayed. That's how we indicate that there was even anything that happened, was that the football season was delayed by a month. And that it was a big deal. Once it resumed, oh, yay, we can celebrate. And it was the same time that the war was over. The war is over. Football is back in season. Life is as we know it, which is pretty interesting. Now, I'll say for 1918, hockey did not shut down. And in fact, the Stanley Cup, they made it all the way to the Stanley Cup, right? The hockey team's playing in 1919. The Stanley Cup itself had to be canceled because one team was quarantined. So hockey was not canceled, but then in the end it actually was. So they went on playing, everything's over, because what you'll see in epidemics is that media coverage pretends everything over before it actually is over, as we've experienced, right? Mm-hmm. And they did that with hockey, but then they had to cancel the Stanley Cup because of quarantine.
Yeah, and Stanley Cup is kind of a big deal in hockey.
World. A really, really big deal.
And that's the interesting part about it. Because hockey with the recent incident, they were the first ones to, them and the NBA this year were they had it handled and they just finished. And it's just the irony there they're the first league. They were one of the first leagues to finish this year. Looking at media, because I have a lot of students now that they can't even understand life before the internet. Or life before what they can see on their phones, and how, you know, when we're talking 1918, this is obviously no television, no radio, really, to the, no radio. So they
theaters were closed, so no movies. The theaters closed because of quarantine.
And so what did people rely on to get their information?
Newspapers, and a lot of newspapers, you know, multiple newspapers from the same town at the same time, and then also letters. But again, wartime, so the letters were censored depending on who you were writing, and then of course each other and books. So it really didn't, especially for those students who were quarantined at the University of Kansas at the on campus, they didn't really have a lot of different information or a lot to do.
Right, right. And it's you look at the returns now you've got the quarantine and then trying to get back to normal life. You know, was there much of a push back then to, all right, let's hurry up and get things back to normal, that then sometimes we've seen in just general society nowadays, but especially sports and trying to return to the court and return to the field?
Well, there was less resistance because there weren't really outlets for people to express their resistance. So everything was framed differently in the media messages of the day. So it would come from the authority says it's okay for us to open. Like depending on which state we're talking about, the governor says it's okay to open the state, or the mayor said that we can open the theaters. And with that came the return to sports. Less of a transitional period though. So even though we see like the pictures of people in masks have been circulating from 1918, and I did a whole blog post on that, on how the kind of the development of that. But there was less of a transitional period, at least I found, between quarantine time and returning to normal. It was more like, time to open, and we're good, right? Even though they did go to mass a little bit later on in some places, but it wasn't quite the same thing. Like, we weren't trying to, at least from what I found, trying to play football with mass or play hockey with mass on. It just was kind of a different, and there's one picture of people at a baseball game in February of 1919 of people wearing masks, but that's all I can find as far as baseball and people masking up. And maybe they did more so, but maybe the media coverage just wasn't there. But without that resistance or any kind of counter outlets for people to express themselves, there really isn't kind of a debate. It's just either this is what we're doing right now and now we're open or we're closed, right?
Yeah, because now you've got, you know, they're trying to do everything they can right now to get the games going, at least get them on TV. The visual fans in the stands is not as important because of television and other forms of media. Back then, different story. So they could do that flipping of a switch and be able to just, all right, we're back. So here we've seen a lot of different gradual response compared to what you described in 1918.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and people expect to be entertained immediately all the time right now. And so I think that's a shift too. And I did want to note that there were a small pockets of resistance, because otherwise that's the feedback you're going to get because of the anti-mask society in San Francisco. But again, it wasn't on a large scale, and it at least wasn't tied into sports. But I did want to tell you that one sports writer in 1918, because he had nothing to report on, made up his own lineup based on terms from the epidemic. So a sports writer, instead he like starred like a vaccine as a quarterback, and I mean, it's hilarious. It's a whole lineup. He did this whole thing just as, I wrote about that for a piece for the Smithsonian on what people created. That was one thing. Sports writers just made up things like quarantine is going to be the linebacker, and like, how do you entertain yourself? I guess you use metaphors for a fake team.
Yeah, it's because you talk about, you know, sports writing and sports in general, you write a lot about nuts and bolts. And so sometimes you got to do other things to, I guess, fill time and capture people's attention. But, you know, your book also talks about how news reporters, when they're talking about epidemics, it's more than just those nuts and bolts. You know, obviously, in that case, you talk about maybe a little bit of comedy and a little bit of relief from the everyday norm. But we're also starting to get into political agendas and beliefs and theories of the disease, and you're getting a little bit more than the nuts and the bolts. Do you think the sports world is subjected to those kinds of things as well from the news media?
Oh, absolutely. But oh, I would imagine almost in a more freeing way, in the same way that the people who write about entertainment and pop culture can get around, can, kind of, I would say, underscore what they're saying without directly saying it sometimes with either an agenda or kind of without directly politicizing the epidemic. And I think a great example right now is the NBA bubble. I mean, what an excellent example of, making it work in a way that we haven't seen in other areas of society and demonstrating what works without directly saying, okay, everybody look at us, White House, look at us. Here's what's working, even though other people I think are making that parallels, but the sports writers don't even have to. By just writing about the NBA bubble and its successes, you're demonstrating something pretty big.
Yeah, and when, let me ask this. When, this recent book that was just published in September, when did you start writing it? And when the in, during the recent events, how is the, I mean, you talk about timing. It's when did you start writing it, and when did were you able to was it was finished and wrapped up before COVID happened, or were you able to at least to include a little bit of that there?
Okay, so crazy timing. It was something I'd want to do for a while. So I've been thinking about it for a couple of years. I did a semester of an NIA or sabbatical, our form of sabbatical, in fall of 2018. And so that's when I wrote it, 2018 to 2019. I was really writing the chapters, got the manuscript in, but I did the final proofs the week after the kids got sent home for the shutdown.
Oh, wow.
So fortunately for me, because it would have been pretty outdated if immediately my book said someday there might be a pandemic and then there's a pandemic when it comes out. I was lucky enough to have access to the manuscript to revise in February, and then I looked at the final proofs in March. So just enough that I could have some of it shaped by what are we looking at right now? What are we experiencing? I mean, I was at my peak stress point with trying to crisis school the kids, shift my own classes online, and then proofreading this manuscript on epidemics as we're experiencing it. So that was pretty crazy. I had no idea that this was going to happen, obviously.
Yeah, and has this experience in recent months, are we just starting to look ahead and maybe future projects and such? I mean, obviously you're an expert in the field talking about media and epidemics and the response to them. Have you thought about doing some more things in the future?
Well, great question. Well, one thing I wanted to bring more to our own curriculum on epidemics. I'm going to propose a course on epidemics and media because I don't think we talk about epidemics enough. And I think that that's before this pandemic, it's not something that's been part of collective memory enough. And that's a big reason why I think everybody's been so shocked that this could even happen is that we don't talk about it. It's not covered in pop culture enough. It's not brought into sports except for like the Iditarod and the race for the diphtheria anti-serum, even though most people don't know that. All right, so I would like to do it through a curriculum, but also eventually I would like to do a second book on epidemics, which would be my seventh book, but second book on epidemics, looking at the Hong Kong flu all the way through, looking at the AIDS crisis, SARS, Ebola, all the way through, including COVID-19. But we need to be through this before I can write on it, because you can't reflect on what's happened when you're still in the midst of it. So I definitely want to do something, and I think I need to have kind of part two of what I'm looking at, but it certainly would have a global perspective and not be so focused on the United States.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Foss, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. I appreciate it. And thanks for all the work that you've been doing.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. That's Dr. Katie Foss from Middle Tennessee State University, author of the new book, Constructing the Outbreak.
It's not about the paycheck. It's about respect. It's about looking in the mirror and knowing that you've done something valuable with your day.
Let's take a look at some jobs. UNC Asheville is looking for their next director of athletics communication. This person will lead the athletic department's media team and also be a lead developer for their communications and publicity. They're looking for someone with a bachelor's degree, 2 to 5 years of sports information experience, a background leading a communications staff, and live streaming. For more information, go to the UNC Asheville website and click careers. 10 Tampa Bay is looking for a sports director. This person will cover a variety of sports on a daily basis, including the Tampa Bay Bucks, the Lightning, the Rays, local universities, and area high schools. Oh yeah, the Super Bowl's there this year, and on their network. You'll need 3 to 5 years of experience and a willingness and ability to shoot video, which means no anchor wannabes. To apply, go to the Tegna website and click Jobs. Score Media and Gaming Incorporated is looking for a video producer to work on a remote basis. The company provides content through digital media and sports betting products. This person will create video content for the Score's social media platforms, clips for shows, and other production-related duties. You'll need to have knowledge on social media platforms, advanced writing skills, and know Photoshop, After Effects, and Premiere Pro. To apply, go to scoremediaandgaming.com and click on Careers. That's it for this episode of the Sports Gig Podcast. Thanks again to Dr. Katie Foss from Middle Tennessee State University. Be sure to check out the website at sportsgigpodcast.com or follow on Twitter at sports_gig. We'll see you next time.